Good evening
to you, listeners, and thank you for always tuning in to Witness Radio. Tomorrow, 31st of October, up to November 2nd, the Minister of Energy and Mineral Development, in partnership with the National Renewable Energy Platform, will be holding the 4th Renewable Energy Conference and Expo, also known as REC 2024 Expo, at Munyonyo Commonwealth Resort in Kampala. The theme of this conference is to transform livelihoods through clean energy access. This conference brings together experts, innovators, policymakers, stakeholders, and many others to discuss and advance the clean energy agenda in Uganda. So in this program, we speak to Mr. Kimbowa Richard. Mr. Kimbowa Richard is the chairman of Renewable Energy Civil Society Organizations Network. In brief, RESCO. This is a loose semi-formal network that brings together civil society organizations, academic institutions, individuals, and networks engaged in promotion and development of activities and practices in the renewable energy subsector at all levels, national level, the local level, the sub-regional level, and community level. So we speak to Mr. Kimbowa to understand what this conference means to the common person and what to expect in this conference. Thank you so much for giving us some time for this program. First, let's talk about the newsletter you released as the Renewable Energy CSOs Network, ahead of a Renewable Energy Conference and Expo. So first and foremost, you called for inclusion of people.
Yes.
In decision-making of the energy projects. Ahead of this expo is the RESCO CSOs. Are they attending, and how are they attending this conference?
Most of the, first of all, the sessions that have been put forward, the organizers, including civil society, private sector, and others. It is one way in which particular people, but I mean, not the only one, it is, and deep and come to this. Sometimes they become too technical and so on, but the opening is there to come and listen and contribute ideas to this REC 24. That's one. Of course, the judgment is out there, whether when the report comes out or the discussions, the ideas are put forward, how far they are implemented.
Okay.
That's another thing, because this is not the rate we have had. We have had a couple of rates in the previous years. So maybe it's also very important to ask the organizers to see how far these are. The recommendations from the REC, because there are quite many recommendations that have been made over time, and therefore it's really important to find out how far they have been made, and then they can judge whether the people's aspirations are being considered. The other way is the exhibitions. I think the exhibitions are very straightforward, that people come with ideas, they want to show case what they're doing, and in that way, it is an excellent moment to exchange ideas, to exchange cards, to exchange, networking, the broader bit of it, and then they're able to get people whom they can work with in the next few years. I think there are stories of people who have been, connected as part of the REC event.
Okay.
Being private sector, be them NGOs, be them individuals, bring their small businesses, and then people get to know what they are doing, and then they're able to get, partners. The partnerships that have been, created in that regard.
Okay.
Apart from that, of course, they have the wider media in terms of, for example, what you are doing, in terms of letting the world know that there is this thing there, and therefore some people who might want to follow it up might know which institution they might be interested in as they get publicity. And then they get interested in what they're doing, especially the technologies. Okay. People are yearning for technologies that can help them to overcome the energy deficit that they have, and therefore it helps to publish some of these things that are very important.
This is now the fourth conference. To what extent have the past conferences addressed Uganda's demands and difficulties related to renewable energy? And have there been successes? And if at all they've been, we would want to hear from them.
Yeah, I think for me, I look at REC as it has been a point of convergence for actors in the renewable energy sector. Because, you know, before, we had no platform at all. So the National Renewable Energy Platform has been an excellent job, if you want, to bring all actors together. As civil society, we've been doing ours through the Renewable Energy Space Network, and then others have been doing it as a private sector, and then the think tanks, and the donors sitting their own. So when we had the NREF organizing this renewable energy conference, and at least once a year, it has helped to break that ice that each of us needs one another. And in one way, at that stage, yes, I think it is excellent. It is a good step. Now, come to the recommendations. I think they have also enabled us to start thinking of how best we can efficiently use our technical resources, and then also and other resources, so that we don't duplicate. But coming to REC, when we will come to realize that you are not the only one making briquettes. A whole number of people are making briquettes in different ways, in different technologies. And therefore, those who are involved then go back and start thinking that, what we're doing is the best, or are we doing it? Why are we doing it here when others are also doing it? And also, they get to know that there are demands elsewhere in the country. And therefore, they start thinking about, you know, expanding or moving to other areas. The same with stores. It's the same thing. I mean, lots of stores are happening. And it imagines that people have the same challenges when they're setting stores. The standards, the quality, and so on and so forth. So it's like people, the ideas of challenges have come up and they still come up. And therefore, I think that highlighting, flagging out some of these things, either the challenges, opportunities, the constraints, has also been a very useful part of REC. Like I mentioned before, we haven't yet come out to evaluate independently, if you want. How far has REC recommendations been put, how far have they been taken up? Because there's always a good talk, and we have all these sessions and everything.
Yep.
But in a very specific sense, you would want to take up one that the thread, for example, there must be a thread of that keeps coming, but are we addressing it? That's probably the next stage that we would want to see, maybe before we get into our 5th anniversary, if you want. I would want to see something very important to evaluate at the 5th anniversary, whether the recommendation, especially the thread, meaning that keep reoccurring, are they being addressed? And then also there are other structural things that impact on REC. Much as the people are talking about that, then there is a government policy that keeps coming, like the presidential directive, for example, on charcoal. It's something that came from northern Uganda. It's something that impacts on renewable energy in one way or another. It may sound positive, but the other way is that the fallback for many of the communities is always the off guard, and therefore it drove some of the people to do things underground. As you already know, you are witnessing, you know these things.
Yes, yes.
So in a way, there are external forces that impact on us. The other one being climate change, you have no control at all. It ravages everyone, and they have no option but to go and hack down trees, and then they have to use unclean, not very clean sources of energy, including weeds to cook, you know, maize elite clovers, the clovers and everything. So these are the things that we really need to look to expand on it. Mm. One, the mm. next before the next race.
Okay. Mr. Timbo, you mentioned about the implementation of the recommendations. Do we have a committee that follows up on these recommendations, whether they are implemented or not? And how are we bridging that gap?
The recommendations have their particular duty bearers, if you want. Apart from the NRE, that is also representative of all the actors,
mm.
I think, first of all, the primary people should be the duty bearers in the Ministry of Energy and Mineral Development that have to follow through this against the policy, the recommendations, whether they are part of policy and they are getting them fast-tracked. If they're not in policy, how can they be implemented? That is one. And also giving them time around and the resources that they require. That's one thing. But then the other thing is that as actors, again, this platform, the National Renewable Energy Platform, would be an excellent, action place, one of these things. But I think we have not started, you know, taking this as at that level, because it would be like influencing, as an influencer, to get things done. But I don't think the NREP membership is this very strong to do that. But the only hope is that as time goes on, then the individual NREP membership, like the civil society, we're trying our part to do it through advocates and so on, and the private sector, influence the trends in terms of the development partners, in terms of government policies, and that happened. But the other one would be the recent changes in the energy sector. I think have also been partially informed by some of these discussions in the NRF or the REC.
Mm.
For example, the policy, the energy policy, 2023.
Yes.
I can say we contributed as the REXO, as the renewable energy space, when it was, and I guess other actors as well, in having it the way it is, so that it's quite ambitious. As when you read through, the targets are very ambitious. We're talking about 2030, which is just next few years to come.
Mm.
The issue of clean energy is very, very strong, though it is a global discussion, but also, it is very, very strong.
Yes.
And also the importance of the energy environment or health issues, social safety, and so on. These are things that we're at the heart of our discussion as CSOs, and these are things that have come up, and we hope that the next stage will be in the implementation of some of these things.
Okay.
So in broader terms, the things that have come up, I think they need to be taken by the duty bearers, but we need to push them.
Okay.
And potentially we need to push them to get these things done.
Okay. Mr. Timbo, you're talking of clean energy. We have less than 10% of Ugandans having access to clean energy. And the theme of this conference is transforming livelihoods through clean energy access. How applicable is this?
I think it's quite an uphill task, so to say. You know, first of all, when you get only 4%, 10%, as you say, actually 4%, you're having access to clean energy. It's not good news. But the other thing is that why is situation like this the way it is? A lot of challenges, the structural challenges, lots of limitations or constraints that are in place that can help, that are affecting this situation. But also the global challenges of climate change and so on. But I think the year, when you talk about only 2030, that's something maybe you could also highlight, that where the policy, for example, the energy policy talks of, you know, very ambitiously talking about transforming everything, getting people to access the clean energy by 2030.
Yes.
Yeah, it's very ambitious. And so, but they analyzing it is like, first of all, there are challenges, and then there are the options that are available on the market are also constrained by access. People cannot access some of the things for various reasons, being, first of all, the upfront cost being very high, the understanding and the knowledge and appreciation being very low.
Okay.
The cultural constraints are also very, very high. And then above all, the practices that we have cannot enable us to, as small things like having no kitchens at home, means that someone is, you look at some of these houses, I think even the census has shown us, very few people have kitchens and they're serious. And therefore, when you want to invest in a clean energy device or technology, you don't have the motivation because you don't have a kitchen. So you'd rather use a small thing outside there and you think that is very good. And that is a simple thing that people take for granted.
Okay.
So the starting point would be a mindset, a behavior change in what you invest in your kitchen. And then when you invest in the kitchen, you are likely to get a better option, a device that you value, and therefore you can close your kitchen and have more and more. Because the differences are there. But you say, now, where will I put it? You see, that is the next question you have. The simple thing. There are things, of course, the practices. The practice, how do you cook? And so on and so forth. So that's how I see things. Simple, hands-on things that can really transform this situation.
So, but do you think transforming the livelihood by 2030, do you think this can be achieved? Because we are seeing only 4% as of 2024 having access to clean energy. Do you think that can be achieved within the remaining years?
I don't think we can achieve this. I think.
And how do the civil societies working under the renewable energy supporting the government to achieve, if at all there is any way?
I think the time is against us, and we are not likely to achieve that transformation as far as SDG is concerned and clean energy access. Broadly, it is not only Uganda. I think many countries in the global south, sub-Saharan Africa, are still caught up in this this challenge. If you read the report on the SDG report of, I think this year's SDG report 2024, it's still a big challenge. And I think part of the challenge, the problem, as you may also note, it's part of, you might say it's about financial resources, but also there are lots of other things that need to be changed in terms of, first of all, getting to the target, call them clients that are heavy users of unclean, or you want to, those are not using energy. How can they be induced to use clean energy? How can they be induced to change or to switch? For example, here in Uganda, you talk about institutions that are heavily using biomass. And then the other side of it, you have people, you have electricity that is being produced that could offset this. But then the cost of electricity is very high. So you can see the disconnect.
Okay.
What we're saying is that it's very important that we face it and say, let us get all the urbanites to be as much as many urbanites and institutions that can afford to switch and get into using electricity for cooking.
Okay.
I think what many did in their cooking tariff is one of the interventions that I think is something that needs to be scaled up or even improved much more across the country. In women areas where women is operating, it is working very well. But when you go to West Nile, for example, when Reco is not having a cooking tariff, and that in itself is like certain regions need to also have a feel of what this is, and then they are motivated to do it. So perhaps even other areas should be the same. So, but also this tariff can even be increased, because the more you motivate people, the more you can have a quicker switch. That's one. Then the other thing is that the even the people themselves at the household level, I think, have not appreciated the importance of energy efficiency, be it the stoves, even the practices that they are using to cook. These are things that need to be scaled up in a huge campaign. We have been always calling for a huge campaign. I know it takes money and everything, but I think it should not be, the times have changed that it can no longer stand on its own, but rather be incorporated in other development situations. Like when you say the CBM, for example, let it be a must for the beneficiary to show that they are taking up an energy, you know, saving or energy efficiency intervention or practice. As before, they are being, for example, even more given resources. Even they grow. For example, it talks about these things. But it needs to be more concrete. And this is one concrete way in which this can happen. Okay. So, and the youth and other things and so on. Let it be either the demand side, or even the supply side in terms of planting trees for the future. So these are things that we have been calling for, and we still think that they are very, very much.
Okay. Thank you so much, Mr. I have this question that I wanted also to pose to you. Yes, you're calling for inclusion of people, but we want to know to what extent are those people in need of renewable energy included, and what should they expect in this fourth renewable energy conference and expo? What new should they expect?
Yeah, I think people should be expecting, if I stand in the, from my own experience, is that people are waiting for options. The price of charcoal, the price of firewood has gone up, you know, for many years. From the late 2023, again, the whole of this year, the price of firewood itself is high.
It's high, yes.
So person who is waiting, even charcoal. You know, charcoal had already gone up, but the firewood. Firewood, even in the upcountry areas like West Nile, is already up. So in another 90, when you mentioned the renewable energy conference, the first thing you say, are they going to help us to address the price of charcoal or firewood at that? Are they providing us options to firewood that has gone up? So for me, that's the primary thing. And that is what we call the people-centered, you know, approach.
Okay.
That things that are at the heart of everyone at the moment.
Mm.
You know, talking about science and everything, we like it very much. But now let's talk about things that are, you know, affecting everyone. Or the institutions that are not very sure whether they will cook the next morning. In Bali, I interfaced with a family of elderly who have food but they don't have firewood. So it was that very strange that now they have food but they don't have firewood.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can imagine such a family, for their primary thing when you hear on the radio rec, I hope they will talk about how we can, you know, cook. That's all. Full stop. Yes.
Yes, Mr. Chimbo, Uganda's 2023 energy policy positions our country as the East African leader in renewable energy change. And at the same time, we have activists, the climate activists, accusing the government of promoting fossil fuels, including the oil in the Midwestern Uganda, which they say will harm the environment. Do you think the government will fulfill its pledge to lead the way in renewable energy? Don't you think this agenda is getting distracted by the oil developments? How do you think about this?
Yeah, I think the one leg is one thing in oil and gas, and one leg is renewable energy. But I think the times are... The writing is on the wall. You cannot invest in oil and gas in the next so many years. I think times have come, and the trends are very clear. The global trends, including reports that are, you know, even this week, that are coming out, say that the investment in oil and gas for anybody who is going to invest in it is very cautious at the moment. So it's like that's part of it, that the renewable energy drive, you cannot stop it anymore. So the area you jump on the board is the better. That's one. The other thing, of course, it's understandable that now you have discovered the oil and gas and everything. so you'd want to rush and, you know, benefit from it. That's very fine. But the idea is that you have to be very cautious about this. Make sure that you the investment in renewable energy goes, you know, side by side with this. And eventually, you know, if it's a graph, it should be, you know, slowing down with time.
Mm.
And it's possible the earliest you get out of what you get, the better. For me, that is my point.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Earlier this year, around March, Uganda is one of the countries that had a lot of heat waves. And
yes,
experts warned that the climate change is brought by human activities that are carried out within Uganda and everywhere. Are there any ways that we can use renewable energy resources to address the climate changes in our country?
Yeah, I think we can look at it as a global citizen. Of course, part of the sharing of the heat waves is because of the heavy use of fossil fuels elsewhere, and then we are paying the price as in the south of those countries that are still developing. So the first thing would be the mitigation for those who are using it in terms of reducing those greenhouse gases. For them to switch very, very quickly and coherently from the use of fossil fuels, so that we don't get the fail as we have had, not only us but elsewhere in the world. That's one thing. So, but stronger should be the mitigation. The countries that are heavily releasing greenhouse gases should be doing this. And then the other side of it is, of course, adaptation in terms of coping and building resilience when it is happening here. Perhaps then you have to do something about it.
Mm.
So it means that the people have to be given skills, knowledge, and technology on how do they, if it ever happens, how do you manage? How do you get, how do you have, for example, get houses that are very resilient or are habitable at that? How are you able to get water in such situations?
Okay.
The clean water, that is. How do you even the food?
Okay.
How do you manage your food? Your access to food and so on and so forth. Even energy.
Mm.
So it's like a two-way area that heavily. I think it should be the push for the climate change. You know, conferences and negotiations should be the push for mitigation from those countries, but also them to support the adaptation and resilience that has to happen in our countries, because we are hugely not responsible for what is we are paying for, and therefore it has to be paid up for those that
are causing,
you know, brought it up in the first place.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you so much. Your last remarks, Mr. Chimboa.
Yeah, I look forward to REC to be, as I mentioned, people centered.
Mm.
And so whoever is, for example, somebody who is listening on the radio should be having as a small answer of what solutions are you bringing up as a REC to our situation in the high price of firewood and charcoal. As simple as that.
Okay. Thank you so much, Mr. Chimboa.
All right. Thank you very much.